Hello there, and welcome along to this racing postcast. It's Monday, the 24th of May. I'm Maddie Playell, and I'm joined this week by James Stevens and Tom Collins, both who have been out and about various places this week. James, in fact, has been off to Cheltenham, which is quite interesting. But anyway, coming up on today's show, we're going to have a look back on the two Irish classics, the Tattersall's Irish 2000 Guineas and indeed the 1000 Guineas. There was also top class action at Haydock on Saturday, including the Sandy Lane Stakes and the Temple Stakes, some Royal Ascot indications among the races there, and also the Group 1 at the Tattersall's Gold Cup on Sunday at the Curragh as well. And then we're going to look ahead to some meetings this week, get the guys' Royal Ascot best bets, and also the Brie de Gerard, which is a personal favourite meeting of mine. Perhaps they might have some thoughts on that. So without further ado, let's get straight on into it. And the Tattersall's Irish 2000 Guineas is where we're going to start. Poetic Flair, he'd run and won the Newmarket version. He was disappointing in the French version, and this was a quick turnaround. And for much of the closing stages, it looked as if he was going to back up remarkably from travelling abroad, but it wasn't to be. And his stablemate Max Swinney held on under Rory Cleary to give trainer Jim Bolger a 1-2. What's your view on this overall, Tom, of the strength of this Guineas first up?
It was nice to see a form horse come out on top, I thought, in Max Swinney. He's obviously a Group 1 winner already, having won the Virtue Futurity in his final start last year. Those two are miles clear, weren't they, of the rest of the field. Lucky Vegas stayed on back in the pack. Shapen is like a horse that wants further, and he was running over 5 furlongs as a 2-year-old, which is a bit odd. I was happy that Max Swinney beat Poetic Flair. I understand that Poetic Flair obviously won the 2000 Guineas at Newmarket. I couldn't understand, though, why Kevin Manning wasn't on Max Swinney. Everyone from the Jim Bolger yard, including the man himself and Manning, have been talking about Max Swinney in glowing terms this year, haven't they, as their leading light in the three-year-old division. And I know it's hard to get off a classic winner, but surely you've got to ride Max Swinney in this race. And I think he's a real derby contender going forward. Now, I don't know what he beat. Obviously, Van Gogh ran okay back in the pack. He kind of just stayed on one pace. Wembley disappointed again. There were other disappointments in the field, and the front two were clear. But he is by 2008 Derby winner New Approach, who also sired Massar, won a Derby in 2018. He sired 2013 runner-up Libertarian. He sired Oaks winner Talent. So he's bred to go to Epsom. He's clearly going to stay further. The way he hit the line was really impressive, and he kind of galloped them into submission, including Poetic Flair, who looked like the likely winner, as you said, but just couldn't get past his stablemate, who just kept battling grimly. I think he's a Derby contender. I'm not sure what he beat, but I like the way he shaped.
Okay, and how important do you think this testing ground is to him? Because his record's just quite important, and maybe he's not guaranteed to get that at Epsom.
Yeah, exactly. That is a concern. You have to try and find holes in these horses, don't you? Because that's how you assess a race, whether if a horse has no holes in them whatsoever, then you know you're going to fancy them. But His three bigger twins have come on soft or heavy ground. He did win on yielding. His maiden, he beat Wembley on yielding. And he ran okay on good ground on his return behind Bolshaw Ballet in a race where he didn't get the run of it at all. He was in behind and Ryan Moore kind of dictated up front. It's a question mark, isn't it? You have to take it on trust that he handles better conditions. I don't think he wins the Derby, but he definitely deserves to be right up there in the market.
Just to clarify then, Max Swinney as big as 15-2 for the Derby, as short as 5-1. Bolshoi Ballet leading the current market is the 2-1 favourite. High definition is 4s, and then you've got Mahafeth and John Leeper at 8-1. Now, interestingly, James, we're seeing quite a lot of experienced sports stars doing fantastically well at the minute. TC knows all about John Velasquez, doing amazingly in American racing. We've got Frankie Dettori over here still winning classics, and even just recently Phil Mickelson winning the Gulf. So what do you think it is about Jim Bolger that's made him have such a successful season this year?
Yeah, and you've clearly missed Kevin Ellison, who put Newport County into the League Two playoff finals last night.
Do you know what? I actually saw that. Well, I was watching something this morning. I did see that. He's 42, wasn't he?
He's 42 and still going strong, but Jim Bolger, he's having a marvellous season, and you know, you've got to really enjoy seeing the successes he's had, not just sort of yesterday and the weekend, apologies, but all of this season, and it's a heartwarming story, isn't it, to see him have two really proper horses. And I mean, I don't know how much this is down to sort of the fact that the Tories won a classic again, Kevin Manning's riding for one of the Europe's finest trainers in Jim Bolger, and they've got some good horses. It sort of happens in racing, you know, good horses end up at these good yards. Just by sort of every 3 years, a good one will come up for them. And it seems they've got two really smart ones. I mean, I watched the 2000 thinking that Poetic Force was the horse really to take out the race. I mean, I know Tom was talking there about Kevin Manning, sort of, why didn't he ride the other one up? I sort of feel he's probably gone there thinking, I want to make amends after what happened in France, which is perfectly fair. And he almost did. I mean, probably Max Winnie was the horse for me that was better suited by the ground, and perhaps that was the sort of the difference on the day. But for me, he has to be a serious Derby contender. I mean, I know it's not a traditional route going from sort of the Irish Guineas to the Derby. I think it was 1975, the last horse to win both. So it's not one that people often take. But that said, if you go through the pedigree, a lot of those sort of horses that win it will be some sort of middle distance horses and bred by sprinters. Well, Max Winnie isn't that case. He's actually got staying on both sides. So the trip isn't going to be a problem. But yeah, I'd worry that he might want ground with a bit of cutting there if he's going to beat some of these sort of really nice unexposed types from Britain and from Aidan O'Brien. But from a form perspective, he is absolutely in with a shout.
For sure. Some slightly disappointing group action on the same card. We had the Greenland Stakes won by Gustavus Weston and the Lanway Stud Stakes won by Opponent Plays. But perhaps more relevant going forward was the Marble Hill Stakes won by Castle Star, Group 3 over 6 furlongs for the Juveniles TC. What was your impression of this horse?
Yeah, I love the way he travelled. He was out on the outside of the pack, wasn't he? And Chris Hayes just... I heard in a post-race interview that Chris Hayes said he'd never travelled so well on a horse in his life, which is a huge statement. Obviously, this is a two-year-old colt by Star Spangled Banner. He did loom up there like a real superstar, and he kicked clear to him by two lengths. Clearly improving all the time, posting progressive RPRs for each of his four starts. Even though we haven't got the latest one, I'm 100% sure it's going to be better than the 97 he achieved when he won a listed race prior. And the second in the race, Masito, was heavily backed in the style of a horse trained by Donica O'Brien that you'd expect is going to be pretty useful. He's only had one start coming into the race, Masito, and he met a lot of trouble, but he stayed on powerfully in the closing stages. So Castle Star might have beaten a good horse, and he did it very impressively. So I certainly wouldn't be writing him off for any big group races coming up, Royal Ascot and the like.
Okay, we've got some other nice juvenile performances to mention just a little bit later on. But to the three-year-olds now, and over to Haydock, the Sandy Lane Stakes, the Group 2, was won by 33-1 shot in Rohan. And he had group race form, so surprisingly he went off that big for David Evans and Shane Kelly. Running in the colours, the owner, Chris Keeley Racing, they had Shu, the really well-backed juvenile, earlier on in the week, and Rohan got the verdict by a nose from Dragon Symbol. Lots of talk about Dragon Symbol beforehand on this ground, but personally I thought it was a really promising effort. But Rohan, he just keeps progressing, TC, by Mason. Obviously he just loved that heavy ground as well.
Yeah, another impressive victory. I think that's six wins this year for Rohan. He's continuing his rise up the ranks. I can't believe he was sent off 4-1 to win a Newcastle Nursery off a mark of just 55 in December. What a bet that would have been in hindsight. David Evans has done a great job with him. He seems to have a different group of horses this year, David Evans. I usually associate him with, you know, early season two-year-old types that go run in the Brocklesby or low-grade handicappers on the all-weather. But he seems to have a really nice young crop. Rohan obviously heading the three-year-old ranks, and as you say, Shu and a couple of others, two-year-olds as well. So he could have a nice string moving forward. Rohan, 33-1. I didn't like him personally. Maybe it was because I wanted to back a horse that was more proven at the level. I know he was impressive last time at Ascot. His biggest asset is clearly his high cruising speed, isn't it? It can just take him into the race much further than other horses can go without being scrubbed along. And Shane Kelly gave him a great ride. Personally, I thought the best horse was actually in third, not in second. On the day, this is Dragon Symbol, I believe, will be the best horse in time. But I thought he had every chance of winning that. I know he moved slightly from the stand side rail over to the middle and then back to the stand side rail, which could have cost him a bit of ground. But I thought that Om Coltham ran a great race. I know she finished third and she got the sex allowance. But she travelled as well as any other horse in the race. She was forced to switch far side after being repeatedly stopped. And that far rail at Haydock was literally a bog. on Saturday. So the fact that she managed to finish third, a close-up third, was a really creditable effort, and she'd be the one that I'll be focusing on moving forward.
Yeah, shameless plug for our new series, The Punting Club there. I quite liked Uncle Thumb. I thought she ran a really good race and turned out to, but just not quite good enough for Rohan and Dragon Symbol. James, should geldings be allowed to run in Group 1s like the Commonwealth Cup? Because this horse is now not allowed to. In this race, we've seen the likes of Harry Angel win it before winning the Commonwealth Cup. What do you think's going to happen now with him? Because he just doesn't have that as an option. Is it fair?
I don't know, to be honest. I can understand that this year we're sort of thinking about it, and we've got this horse and Creative Force as well, who we discussed last week, sort of two real top sprinters who would be among the favourites, really, wouldn't they? And especially in the form. So, yeah, I suppose this year we're looking at it going, maybe they should, maybe they shouldn't. But, I mean, when you go back through the years, it's not like this race hasn't attracted enough runners. I mean, I remember the year that I was at Ascot when Sir Michael Stout's horse won, and I think it must have had about 20-something runners. It was a cracking race. And as you say, 2017, that race with Harry Angel in, Blue Point, Caravaggio, you didn't look at that race and say it's missing, it's lacking. So I would be on the perspective that we need to sort of see if this is a problem in future years and whether this is going to be something that happens quite often before we sort of make a rule change. I know it's a relatively new race, but I wouldn't do it yet. But I think if next year we had the same problem, then it's definitely something to look into. But it's a shame we haven't got them, but it makes it even more competitive from a punting perspective, I suppose.
I suppose it's more if you were the owner of the horse, you'd feel a bit hard done to. I mean, ultimately, if he's good enough to win these Group 1s that are supposed to be producing sires, etc., then that's fine. It's just reflective of the quality overall. But yeah, it's an interesting argument, that's for sure. Let's move on to the other group race on the card at Haydock, and that was the Temple Stakes. Now, it has to be said, this was a pretty poor turnout in the end. Kuamoro, a notable non-runner due to the ground. And the race was won ultimately by Liberty Beach, the favourite at 13-8 for Jason Hart and John Quinn. She saw off Ainsdale, who put in another really good performance, strong staying horse, who again would have been at home on the ground. This probably wasn't the best level TC, but this is a really smart filly and she's been holding her form quite well since she was a two-year-old.
Yeah, the Temple lacked the quality we've seen in previous years with the likes of Batash obviously not turning up. But Liberty Beach, she was the right favourite, and the race kind of panned out exactly how I hoped and expected. I tipped Lady in France last Monday in my RFO column, and I was really happy to see her track through Liberty Beach in the early stages, who I thought was the only danger pre-race. And I thought Lady in France looked like winning at several stages as well. She went odds on in running. She just couldn't get by Liberty Beach. She was now 3-3 when fresh. She clearly just relishes going first time up off a layoff. She's a very buzzy filly. She's got a very high cruising speed, as we always see. She managed to lead Jabberocky. Not many horses can do that, can they? And for a filly with such a high head carriage, she just doesn't stop running, which is weird because you watch her and you think, oh, she's kind of trying to throw this away here. She's not putting her head down and running full speed, but she really gallops under Jason the Hitman Hart, as Graham Rodway likes to call him. And fair play. Look, she was the best horse in the race. Lady in France flattered out in the closing stages. Ainsdale ran a really nice race to pick up second as well, only beating the neck. And another point, the fourth home, Declaring Love. Now, I didn't look at her pre-race much for John Butler and Adam Kirby. It's just not a combination you look at for these kind of group races, especially on turf. But Declaring Love is a really interesting sort. She only had 8 runs coming into the Haydock race. She's the son of Dubawi, a Godolphin cast-off. She was purchased by just 39,000 by the owner, Megan Evans, since John Butler. Then John Butler put her into the Tats Guineas 2-year-old and horses in training sale in April, just a month ago. And the vendor bought her back for 370,000. Now that to me suggests that John Butler and Megan Evans, the owner, believe she's a really exciting filly. Yes, she didn't manage to get ahead in front and she just finished fourth in the Temple, a below par Temple. But I wouldn't be giving up on her. She was staying well close home. Maybe a step back up to 6 furlongs would suit her.
Yeah, interesting filly, wasn't she? Just a 4-year-old, so perhaps more to come from her. Now, there were good races dotted all around Saturday's card, the likes of Goodwood, we had the Tapster and the Festival Stakes. But on that card, just before I open it up for eye catchers, I want to talk about Flotus, who won the opening race for Sylvester D'Souza and Simon and Ed Crisford, the 7-4 favourite. This was a really promising performance over that 6 furlongs, and she beat some highly regarded types as well, James. Royal Ascot's got to be next for her.
Yeah, I was actually doing the report from Goodwood, and I spoke to the Crisfords afterwards, and it was interesting about how they sort of speak about it. You sort of, when these 2-year-olds win first time out, a lot of trainers there, they are just really sort of infused, and they just sort of can't believe what they've seen. It gave me the impression sort of as if they weren't that surprised by that, and I was a little taken aback by that, because they were saying, well, we weren't sure about the ground, but I mean, you look at the way she did it. If she doesn't like the ground and she's gone and done that, I mean, that's seriously impressive. She will go to the Albany next, which is what they've said. They spoke about how sort of she's quite strong. She's got a good mind, which is something, you know, I think it's almost a little bit forgotten about with these sort of early 2-year-olds. If they've got a good mind, that's a big part of what's going to happen. And also, you've got to remember that we're coming into a weird time in racing now where horses are going to be going from having no crowds to suddenly having a huge crowd. And hopefully that happens anyway. So these sort of little factors are going to make a big difference. But from a sort of form perspective, it was a really, really rock solid performance. She travelled well enough, but it was the way she quickened away, which really caught the eye. I mean, she's going to be a likely favourite in the Albany. We'll see what happens with the Irish 2-year-olds, but it was a seriously good performance. And it's no surprise that they think she's not just going to be a good horse for Royal Ascot. They think she's going to be one to follow. So, yeah, that was certainly the performance that had me sort of taken aback, I'd say, on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, by Star Spangled Banner. She did look to have quite a quick ground action, didn't she? But she just floated over the ground. Nevertheless, that soft surface. Interesting point you make there about crowds returning and horses being well equipped to deal with that, because I think that is something that some of us might have perhaps underestimated going into a big festival like Royal Ascot. TC, any thoughts on Flotus or indeed any other performances on Saturday before we go over to Sunday's action?
Yeah, I was really impressed with Flotus. I thought she travelled beautifully. She quickened up nicely away from what I thought would be a favoured standside rail. When it gets soft at Goodwood, they always tend to be better when they race prominently against the rail, but didn't seem to be the case across the day. Nevertheless, she was very impressive. Three other horses that impressed me on Saturday. One, Mo Salita, who ran in the 6 furlong handicap at York. She continued her progression this term with another easy handicap success for trainer Adrian Nichols, who's just done a great job with her. She was running in Sellers before that handicap romp. Via Sistina, who could be the new flag bearer for Joe Tweet, or Joe Tuitt, I'm not quite sure how you pronounce his last name, in the staying division. I thought she was excellent in the Goodwood finale. She travelled all over the field, quickened up nicely. She's a big, imposing filly. Very impressive. She beat a horse called Chiasma, who's very well related by Galileo out of Kind. And then one other we should mention, this horse, which is Stormy Antarctic. Finally got another win under his belt. His first in Britain since 2016. It's an excellent story. I love seeing Stormy Antarctic win. Though I do think Desert Encounter, who finished runner-up again, I think that's his 22nd place from 43 runs. He just wanted Stormy Antarctic to win. Desert Encounter just hung fire again close to home. But great to see Ed Walker's runner just getting in the winner's enclosure once again.
Yeah, he's such a popular horse, isn't he, Stormy Antarctic? Was it the Craven he won all those years ago? And he's been a pretty good level since. James, given your reaction at Goodwood, any thoughts to add?
Yeah, I'd certainly say Tom spot on there about Stormy Antarctic. That's nice to see. And that was his first win in Britain since the Craven in 2016. So it certainly was nice to win. I mean, the other talking point from Goodwood was Huckham, who won the other listed race on the card. There were two listed races. It was a good performance. It wasn't the sort of performance, I suppose, his odds were suggesting 5-6. He sort of hung on. It was a good performance and he, you know, showed plenty at the line. I think he'll go to the Hardwick next and he's going to have to improve a bit to win it from my perspective. But yeah, he's certainly a horse. He's back in form. So he'll be an interesting one going forward.
Okay, an unexpected result at the Curragh on Sunday, won the Group 1s. We're going to talk about that in just a second.
Members Club is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. Get access to The Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. Head to racingpost.com and click subscribe to find out more.
Welcome back. And that unexpected result I spoke about was Helvic Dream winning and getting his revenge on Broom, who he'd finished behind, I think, four times this season. Trained by Noel Mead, a first Group 1 win for that trainer who's so known for his runners over jumps. Colin Keane in the saddle. Now, why was this horse suddenly able to reverse this form, Tom? Because Broom was odds on. He had an excellent season so far. I'm not sure many people could have seen it coming.
Yeah, I think I put it down to the soft, heavy conditions, although the times didn't really suggest that it was that bad out there. But still, I mean, Broom has won races on much quicker conditions. Maybe he just didn't like the extra give in the ground. Also, Broom just seems a very one-paced horse to me. I know he's very talented. He's clearly won at you know, a very high level, and he represents Leading Connections. But he just doesn't do things easily for me. And he seems to take a lot of coaxing in the closing stages. Whereas Helvic Dream travelled into the race 2 to Broom's 1, really loomed up large behind him. At one stage, it looked like he wasn't actually going to go past Broom because Broom was battling away. You can't fault Broom's characteristics and his tenacity because he wanted to win. But it's great for Helvic Dream and Connections. He costs just 12,000 as a yearling. He's now a Group 1 winner. So, look, it's fantastic to see him get his head in front. The time stacked up pretty well against other races on the card as well, so there should be no fluke about it.
Okay, very disappointing performances from Tiger Moth and Serpentine in behind. James, what did you make of this as a contest overall?
Yeah, I think it's hard to judge it because, as you say, they were so disappointing. I think they were the two sort of horses that were going into... I mean, we know what Broom had done this season. He sort of had the form angle. He was the Ryan Moore pick, so to speak. So he was the one that sort of set the standard. But yeah, those were the two horses going into it that we were looking at to sort of bring a different perspective in it. And Serpentine was, I think they were both too bad to be true, to be honest. It was really sort of, it's hard to watch it almost. Serpentine, you just go back, don't you, and think, how did he win that derby? It just makes you think, doesn't it? But Tiger Moth, for me, was a horse I was particularly interested in. I thought he might be sort of progressive this season. He obviously had that campaign tailored towards the Melbourne Cup last year. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he does bounce back. But yeah, it was too bad to be true. With Broom, I mean, the front two for me don't strike me as horses that I'd look at for the Prince of Wales and say they're going to be progressive, they're going to be ones for that. I mean, it wasn't a great race, to be honest, but I don't think this race typically is the strongest Group 1 anyway. So yeah, a bit negative, I suppose.
It's worth mentioning that Shamey Heffernan on Tiger Moth said that the colt gurgled badly from the 1 furlong marker. So I don't think that was his true running.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. We were all anticipating a really nice performance from Tiger Moth. We didn't get it. Now, Love didn't run in this race, perhaps due to the ground, but they are still aiming at the Prince of Wales' stakes with her. I'll go through that betting just quickly in case you're interested. Lord North at 9-4, Love 5-2, Armory 7-1. Adabe 10-1, In Sweep 10-1. So is Japan and Palace Pier as well, if they choose to go up in trip before the Judmont with him, although it looks unlikely. A word on True Self, because it was a great run from her. Holly Doyle in the saddle for Willie Mullins. I mean, it's funny that we're talking about these jumps trainers in the flat game, but it just proves how they are at readying different horses for different targets, James.
Yeah, exactly. I mean... I think the run of this horse probably was more so because other horses didn't quite perform. But, I mean, it's been an amazing story seeing Holly Doyle get rides for Willie Mullins and to go out there and ride him again. They obviously had the success earlier this season. I mean, yeah, you talk about sort of reading horses. I mean, Willie Mullins has been doing this for a long, long, long time. But I think for me, the crucial bit is that Holly Doyle, I mean, for so long, we sort of discussed her as sort of this emerging prospect, but now she is getting the support from someone like Willie Mullins. That's a really big ask, you know, and I've said for a while that I wouldn't be surprised if she made a serious bid for sort of champion jockey in the next few years. And being able to sort of have Willie Mullins sort of supporting you, that will make other trainers look at her even more now. I mean, she's been an amazing story so far, but from a sort of going forward perspective, the fact that Willie Mullins is saying, I want Holly Doyle to come to Ireland and ride True Self in a Group 1, that's a huge credit. And sports personalities are good, but when it comes down to racing, if Willie Mullins is giving you the call, that's a real, real sort of feather in your cap.
Absolutely, some vote of confidence. Now back to the classic generation and the Tassels Irish 1000 Guineas. Another fantastic finish. We were treated to some excellent results on Sunday. The race was won by Empress Josephine, the apparent sort of second string for Ballydoyle, although there was a market move for her late on in the day. She got up by a short head to beat Joan of Arc, who had been all the rage anti-post. No Speak Alexander in third, and 125-1 Bell Image for Sheila Lavery in fourth. Quite an interesting tactical race this, I thought, TC. We had Pretty Gorgeous returning. She was sent off the 15-8 favourite, just caught out on a wing and looked quite keen. And then the likes of Fev Rover and Miss Amulet, who had been doing well over shorter trips last season, they disappointed, but they were all in a bunch. I was a big Joan of Arc fan, and she just seemed to just get chinned on the line, really. But Empress Josephine, she's got a wonderful pedigree as a sister to Minding, unraced as a two-year-old, and it shouldn't have been a surprise, really, I suppose, should it?
No, a 10th victory for Aidan O'Brien, again with a lesser fancy stablemate. Joan of Arc was obviously the number one string despite a late drift. The race was just run at a really slow gallop. The second and third, Joan of Arc and the Harrington horse, No Speak Alexander, they were first and second throughout. No Speak Alexander made the pace. Joan of Arc was in the prime position on the shoulder, and the only horse that could run them down was Empress Josephine. With that in mind, I thought Bell Image, who you mentioned, finished fourth at 125-1, ran a great race. She was held up early. She travelled nicely under Robbie Colgan. She was 125-1 and therefore thought like she was going to finish out the back of the TV. But she finished her race off really well. She won't be 125-1 again, I'll tell you that for nothing. She just needs to be slightly dropped in class. You probably got a group winner on your hand, Sheila Lavery. Empress Josephine, as you mentioned, good pedigree. But so Aidan's horses, they all have good pedigrees, don't they? The time wasn't great at all, maybe because they went slow early, but stacking up against the rest of the races on the card, it was pretty disappointing. I need to see her replicate that performance before I become sweet on her. I don't think it was a very hot heat, though. I feel like I've been saying that for every single three-year-old trial, classic trial this year. But, you know, she was the only one to run down the two horses that were favoured by the pace bias. So you have to put a tick in that box, but I'm just a bit wary of her next time up.
Okay. What's your verdict on Pretty Gorgeous? Would you abandon her going forward, or would you give her another chance, given this was her first run back?
I'll definitely give her another chance. In the Saturday jury, I wrote that I thought she was the best horse in the race, pre-race, obviously. But that first time up, you can't really back her at 9-4, which she was at the time. I know she went off 15-8. I don't see how you can back a filly 9-4, first time up from 2-3, and she'd already had a setback, which caused her to miss Newmarket. I think you've got to give her an excuse that she was never going to run her best race first time up off a layoff in a Group 1. She finished seventh, as you say, caught out on the wing. She took a bump as well. I think next time she'll be a lot better for Joseph O'Brien.
Okay, James, going forward, where do you see Empress Josephine featuring? She does have the Irish Oaks entry, and as I say, the pedigree suggests she could probably stay that mile and a half, maybe even benefit from it.
Yeah, I think Tom's point there about the race being run at quite a slow pace from what we may usually see is probably tells you that this horse is going to probably improve over a bit further. It was sort of staying on best, I thought, which was sort of the sort of secret to her. But it's not the biggest surprise that she's gone and done that. I mean, Aidan O'Brien does have, you know, we talk about his sort of seconds and third strings going and winning these big classic races. But this was one of two runners in the race, and they're both in the top two. This is a horse that could have easily improved. She was sort of race fit, and some of her form was relatively decent. Conditions probably made us good difference to her, but I think the first two will both probably be better over further. I wouldn't be surprised if Joan of Arc does go to France for the French Oaks. I've heard that was discussed, and to be honest, from what we've seen from France, from their fillies, they don't look the strongest bunch this year, so she'd take sort of she'd be one to watch. And yeah, this horse for me, I wouldn't be surprised if they did go for an Irish Oaks. I mean, we know the Santa Barbara story continues to roll on and such, and what she's going to do and how good she is, but you know, they have got now a real smart prospect on their hands with that pedigree to suggest that she's only going to improve. And, you know, it might not be the strongest piece of form, but this might be a horse that's just coming to the boil now. So, look, she's an exciting prospect. But, yeah, she does have to go out and do it again before we start calling her anything like the great Minding was.
You so love Santa Barbara, don't you? I love hearing it
I love the
every week in
story
your
of it.
voice.
I love the story of it, and I just want to see what happens with it. I just like the story of it. It's just incredible that a horse is, you look at all this form, you analyze all the big Group One races, and it's just some horse that's run once that's just has the whole of the fillies division just sort of going, how good are we? It's just I've never, I know it's happened in years gone by, but I've never been so surprised by anything. But it's Aidan O'Brien, you just never know what's going to happen with him. So we certainly will see.
It's a great captivating story with that big market move as well. Now, other performances to note on Sunday, I want to chuck Earlswood in there. I really like this horse. I know it's probably not the deepest division, but I think he's a really nice stayer on the up for Johnny Murta. He won the Galignore Stakes. What do you think, James? Anything else catch your eye at the Curragh or indeed any of the British tracks?
Yeah, I have to say I was sort of watching not with my smartest eye on with playoff League One final semi final to come on with, but I have to say I agreed with that performance. This was the sort of horse that I watched and sort of felt I wonder which direction he sort of goes in, because he's obviously quite lightly raced considering who's considering he's just a 3-year-old and he's sort of a great Group Three winner now. Is he going to win a Derby? No, but I wouldn't be surprised if he sort of continues improving. And I have to say, Johnny Murta, I quite like the way he trains his horses. He doesn't sort of rush them. He doesn't sort of go too hard on them. So I wouldn't be surprised if Earlswood, as you say, does develop into a better horse. But for me, the main sort of horse I was taking away from it was the Irish Guineas winner, because I think she might be quite good. Yeah, it was a not the best Sunday's racing, but there were some interesting stories come out of it.
Indeed, I just want to quickly give mention to a horse in France over to the other code. The Grand Steeplechase to Paris was won for the second time by Docteur de Ballon, really strong stayer, and won again for Louisa Carberry and Bertrand Lestrade, 5.5 lengths back to Carrie Q, another previous winner in behind. I think they've done a fantastic job with that horse, and it definitely deserves mention. So, Docteur de Ballon. One day, maybe we could see him on these shores. I'd love to see that. Now, we're going to look forward to some of the big events of the flat season to come. The Derby and the Oaks we've mentioned throughout the show. But Royal Ascot as well. Let's see who the lads are fancying for that meeting. See if we can perhaps unearth a diamond in the rough.
Be sure to watch Racing Post Live with Betfair for racing reaction, tips and discussion. Live every Saturday afternoon on the Racing Post YouTube channel.
Okay, welcome back to the Monday Postcast. I mentioned Royal Ascot. Now, the lads are probably not going to like me because before we went on air, I said, right, pick a Royal Ascot best bet. Now, it's not the most straightforward sort of meeting to look forward to, given all the imponderables involved, TC. But who's taken your eye? I'm sure you've been looking at those Wesley Ward 2-year-olds in America trying to assess which ones are going to be coming over.
Yeah, exactly. You know me too well. I was asked for my Royal Ascot best bet on RP Live on Saturday, and it's not changed. It's still Ruthin in the Queen Mary. I believe she's 3-1 favourite, which is a bit ridiculous at this stage, but she's probably going to go off 7-4, 6-4. She was just so impressive for Wesley Ward when she made her debut in Keeneland. She posted a good speed figure, cleared away from a decent field. The runner-up that day, he's trained by Rusty Arnold. He's not necessarily a trainer that you would associate with 2-year-old winners, called Artos, that subsequently won and beat a Wesley Ward-trained colt called Overbore. Now, Overbore is a horse who finished third on debut in New York, finished like an absolute train. And I thought he was coming over to Royal Ascot with huge hopes, much like Ruthin in the Queen Mary. But the fact that Artos, who was beaten 6 lengths by Ruthin on debut, managed to beat Overbore just shows how good Ruthin is. She's 3-1. The 11-2 and 9-2 has unfortunately gone with most firms. But I'll be very confident that Ruthin will get it done in the Queen Mary for Wes Ward.
He's such a star, isn't he, Wesley Ward, with those flying fillies in particular. You remember back to Lady Aurelia, what a monstrous performance that was. Ours just can't seem to compete a lot of the time with their brazen speed. James, what about you? Royal Ascot looking close to home, perhaps?
Yeah, there's two sort of at different prices that I sort of look at. We mentioned the Prince of Wales earlier, and I just sort of keep going back to it and just keep looking at the race and the form of it and what some of the older horses have done this year. And I just haven't seen anything for me that has the same sort of appeal as Love. I mean, I know she's going to come back off a break, and I know she's going to be a big price. And the market's sort of dominated by Lord North, who, of course, arguably putting a career best when he went out in Dubai and not too long ago. So he deserves to be favourite. But I just was so impressed by how Love did it last year. I mean, it was the sort of performances that you just looked at and you watch them again. They don't get any worse. You know, they are seriously impressive. And, you know, given the sort of enable fact we had all through last season, for us to really take favouritism off her, you know, it took some going. And for me, if she does, you know, come back off a break, I mean, she won the Guineas easily off a break last year. So, I mean, at sort of 11-4, 5-2, I think she's a real bet. I think that's a really smart prize for a mare who's clearly ridiculously talented, and we still don't know how good she is. At a bigger prize, we'll see him this week, I imagine, but I think Ocean Wind is still improving. You know, we know he's going to stay sort of the Gold Cup trip, 2.5 miles, and look, Stradivarius might be too hard to beat, but there's going to be some value in behind, and a horse that we know is going to stay, he's been in good form this season and is arguably still progressing again, he's one that I'd say is a really nice each way bet. And I was actually quite impressed by his run at Ascot against Stradivarius the other day. Yeah, we'll see what he does in the week. And the one that caught my eye was Pierre Lapin, who's got entries in the Hunt Cup and the Wokingham. He's rated 102. He obviously didn't quite fire last season. But for me, I wouldn't be surprised if they go up to a mile with him. And he ran at first the other day. It wasn't the best piece of form, but you just sort of wonder if he's beginning to turn a corner now, whether it's just going to be a really fast run mile. Might just be what he wants. He's got obviously got loads of speed. He was a Group 2 winner over 6 as a 2-year-old. And it might just be that if he's got a nice weight on his back, if the race is run to suit, he can just unleash that speed that we know he's got. And he probably won't lose it because he's sort of that sort of horse. He's just sort of a turn of foot in the gear. So he's one for me at about 20-1. If he does bring back his form, he would be a real interesting player in that race.
It's been done before. So some good horses for your Racing Post tracker there. And a nice segue you've given me too with Ocean Wind, because he's going to run hopefully on Thursday in the Henry II Stakes at Sandown. That's the Brigadier Gerard meeting. Hopefully I'll be going, so I'm looking forward to that one. You've got the likes of Sangarius and Highest Ground in the Brigadier Gerard itself. I'm not sure Sir Michael Stout's going to run both of them, but it's a race he's dominated in recent years. And also the National Stakes, which is going to provide some Royal Ascot clues. We've got Chipotle, Jukebox, Novello for George Bowie, who's been winning absolutely everything, as well as good two-year-olds Desert Dreamer and Shu, who we mentioned earlier on in the show. TC, what are you most going to be looking forward to on that card?
Yeah, it's a good card, isn't it? Especially for a Thursday evening. Love the Thursday evenings at Sandown. The Brigadier Gerard itself, well, Sir Michael Stout's won the race three times in the last 4 years, 5 times in the last 10 years. His little streak ended last year when Lord North beat his sole runner, Sangarius. I imagine Sangarius will be his runner this time around and not Highest Ground. I could be wrong on that, but I just don't fancy either. I was trying to make a case for both, but I just think Extra Elusive is probably the one in the Brigadier Gerard. Holly Doyle taking the ride for Roger Charlton. Good form last season. He's just a very talented horse and ran a nice comeback after making the trip to Saudi Arabia last time at Sandown behind Wald Connig. Elsewhere on the card, I think Novello will go close in the National Stakes, though if Desert Dreamer does turn up, it's just going to be a match between those two. I really like both horses. Novello really impressed me at Chester last time, quickening clear of Russell in the Bushes. And then another horse on the card is Urban Violet in the last race in the mile handicap for Mick Shannon. She carries a penalty for her last time out of victory at Sandown. She came off a 6-month layoff that time at Sandown, which was 4 days ago, but it'll be 7 days come Thursday. She absolutely romped on soft ground. She looks like a filly who just needs testing conditions. She's racing under a penalty, clearly well in. I imagine she's going to be a reasonably short price favourite, though it does look like a pretty competitive field for a 0-80. She would be my nap of the night, I think, Urban Violet.
Yeah, she didn't have great looking running, did she, when she won either? Was buffeted around all over the place. Still won by 8.5 lengths at the track's recent fixture. So keep your eye out for those. James, anything to add on the Group 3 highlight on Thursday?
Yeah, I think I'd probably agree with Tom, actually, regarding Extra Elusive. I mean, there are doubts about Sangarius. I mean, how good that form at the last day was at Chester. You'd have to question if he's going to take another step forward. I know he had wind surgery, so sometimes it does take a couple of runs for that really to sort of help a horse to improve. And maybe it was just that he got his confidence back. He can take a step forward, but I'll be honest, it's not sort of a race I would be sort of keen to bet on until I sort of I'd rather just watch it, to be perfectly honest. But there's a horse I was quite interested in called Ransom for Sir Michael Stout a bit later on. He won first time out of Lingfield, and he won seriously, seriously well. It wasn't the best race, but it wasn't the worst race. And Ryan Moore was up. It was a good performance that day. He won again. And then last time out, he disappointed. But we've said it all too many times, even last week, about how good Sir Michael is with just sort of progressing these horses. And I just wonder whether this is a progressive sort of handicapper that might end up at Royal Ascot next sort of month. He's got a beautiful Judmont pedigree. And he's one I'd certainly be watching with an eye of sort of Ascot as well. But yeah, the best bet for me for the Ocean Wind. I think he's a real improving horse, and be nice for Roger Teal to get another nice, you know, big group winner.
It would indeed. That's all we've got time for on today's show. As usual, make sure to rate, review and subscribe. Bruce will be back on Friday. Looking forward to the action at Haydock on Saturday at the weekend. In the meantime, let's hope this horrible weather goes away very soon and we can all get back racing. See you next time.